This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. It's 7:33. West Virginia native Sylvia Matthews Burwell faced another round of questions yesterday afternoon as the U.S. Senate Finance Committee considered her nomination to be head of the Department of Health and Human Services. This is Burwell's second confirmation hearing, and as Cecilia Mason reports, she received an endorsement from a key Republican and questions about the Affordable Care Act.
The hearing opened with an introduction by Republican Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma, who said he plans to vote for Burwell's nomination.
The first is she's competent. You know, to me, that says something, because so often we have people placed in positions in Washington that aren't competent for the task at hand. The second thing is she has an outstanding character, and I've experienced that over the past year in working very closely with her and the people at OMB on the problems that we have seen both at Homeland Security, on cyber, and other areas. And so the fact is when you have somebody that's competent and also has strong character, you find a way to get past your differences to try to solve problems.
West Virginia Senator Jay Rockefeller also helped introduce Burwell and pointed out what he considers some of her strengths.
You're brilliant. You won't say that, so I'll have to do it for you. And has been indicated, Harvard Rhodes Scholar. And yet somehow you remain humble, always hardworking, again, this word, ferocious integrity, which means everything to me, and the central devotion of your purpose of public service is to help people better their position in life.
During her opening statement, Burwell told committee members that she plans to focus on three areas should she be approved.
Whether in the public or private sector, working across a range of issues, I focus my work on three things: building strong teams, strengthening relationships, and delivering results. In my role as OMB director, I've worked closely with members of this committee and others to support efforts to return the budget process to regular order and drive towards progress on issues that we all care deeply about. If confirmed, I look forward to working alongside the remarkable men and women of the Department of Health and Human Services to build on their work to ensure that children, families, and seniors have the building blocks of healthy and productive lives.
Republican committee members took the opportunity to make their dissatisfaction with the Affordable Care Act known and expressed frustration with what they consider a lack of communication from HHS under current director Kathleen Sebelius. The ranking Republican, Senator Orrin Hatch, was the first to ask if Burwell would answer queries from Congress in a timely manner.
Do I have your public commitment today that you will respond to our inquiries in no more than 30 days?
Senator, with regard...
Unless you ask us for extra time.
Senator, you have my commitment that with regard to being responsive, that is something I consider important, and I think hopefully you've heard from your colleagues that have had the chance to work with me in the past year that it is something I prioritize in terms of responsiveness and communication.
I was very impressed with what Senator Coburn had to say, and I agree with that, by the way. We'll appreciate that. Now, the second is, what in your opinion should be our recourse as a committee if this public commitment is not kept?
Senator, with regard to if there are frustrations and if I am confirmed, I hope that you would pick up the phone and call me.
Okay.
One of the things that I think actually is a very important part of working and getting to solution, I think, as Dr. Coburn said, we don't always agree. But if we can have conversations, and those conversations can be specific, I think that's something that we can work to figure most things out, even at times when we may not agree.
Democrat Bill Nelson of Florida brought up the problem of Medicare fraud, calling South Florida ground zero and asking Burwell how she'll address it.
Just yesterday, there was another bust.
Mm-hmm.
Law enforcement took down 50 more people. But the problem is, in the past, when you take them down, they've already fleeced the system. You got any thoughts?
Well, a couple of things. I think that we need to work towards a system that isn't pay and chase, But getting in front of the system before the dollars go out, that's the place where we need to have a system. I think there are a number of tools that we need to use. I think we need to use some of the things that we see in the private sector in terms of predictive capabilities, in terms of using technology. I think the partnership that actually did do the work that you're referring to yesterday that was across the nation, the strike force with the Justice Department, is an important part of making sure we do that. The issue of Medicare fraud is something I take very seriously, and in my current role as OMB director, the issue of improper payments is one that have focused on across the entire government.
Other topics committee members touched on included health care for minorities, whether states that used federal money to launch failed health care websites should have to repay that money, and fixing what some call the broken system of reimbursing physicians under Medicare. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Cecilia Mason in Martinsburg.
At the end of the hearing, committee chairman Ron Wyden of Oregon said committee members have until 6 o'clock tomorrow evening to submit questions for the record, and it's his intention to work with other members to push the nomination through the Senate as quickly as possible. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:39. Rainy all day today. A flood watch is in effect for the entire state until 8 o'clock tonight. There is a chance of some thunderstorms that could produce some heavy rainfall. Temperatures will be falling into the 50s today. Rain and thunderstorms overnight with lows in the 40s. Mostly cloudy on Friday with a chance of showers. Temperatures in the 50s and 60s tomorrow.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by the West Virginia Division of Rehabilitation Services, enabling and empowering workers with disabilities to meet business workforce needs. Visit wvdrs.org for employer services.
Parents across the state may soon have a better understanding of how their child's school is faring thanks to a new grading system adopted yesterday by the State Board of Education. At least that's how some members of the board feel about the change. As Ashton Mara reports, the new scale is designed to be clearer in the hopes of getting parents and the community more involved in their local schools.
It started with a directive by Governor Tomlin during his State of the State address in January.
And tonight I ask the State Board to implement an A through F grading system for our schools. This system has been a proven success in 16 other states, and it is a rating system that we can all understand.
4 months later, the State Board approved the new system. Over the next two school years, beginning this fall, each individual school across the state will be evaluated by the State Department of Education's Office of Education Performance Audits, or OEPA, and will be given a grade based on student performance and school quality. Those include criteria like proficiency rates according to test scores, observed academic growth, and graduation rates in schools where they apply. After the initial grading, schools will be required to annually submit a self-monitoring report based on the same standards. And every 4 years, the OEPA will revisit those schools to verify their progress. Again, Governor Tomlin from his State of the State address.
The rating system will provide a better indicator of school-wide achievement. I believe it will engage communities with their schools and encourage everyone to strive for excellence.
Tomlin's position on engagement is backed by several board members, like former board president Wade Linger.
I think we all agree that one of the things that is needed is more community involvement in our schools. And if nothing else, this will signal which communities need to get involved the most, the soonest.
Linger says telling a parent your child's school is a support school or a priority school, the two lowest rankings on the state's current system, is confusing. But to tell that parent your child's school made a D or an F, that makes sense to them and motivates them to get involved. Board member Dr. William White, however, disagrees.
I have a problem with labeling schools in a way that creates a very negative impact on that whole community. Because it doesn't just impact the school. It also impacts the neighborhood. It can impact housing, you know, because housing values can go down. It can impact the fact that teachers may not want to go to that school, so that recruitment could be a big issue. So those are some much deeper issues that we have to deal with. And as I said before, you know, there will probably be teachers who will leave, and they're good teachers, and they just don't. I don't think that many teachers want to work for an F school or a D school.
He says those parents whose children are going to failing schools understand that already, no matter what label you put on them. White was the only member who voted against the policy, which will take effect July 1st. Policy 2320, as it's officially titled, sets up not just that A through F grading scale, but also a way for those individual grades to stack up to a rating for the county school system as a whole. The school system approval process has four levels: full approval, temporary, conditional, or non-approval. The policy also sets up a system for the state board to intervene in individual schools based on their grades, not just in counties who are falling short, as they do now. If a school receives two D or F grades in a row and is not showing adequate progress to change those grades, the board can assign monitors and support teams to the school, direct the county board to put more money and resources into a certain school, and as a final intervention, assign a new principal to the school who reports directly to the state board instead of the individual county school board. This is similar to the current county takeover system, in which the State Board of Education appoints a new county superintendent who is employed directly by the state. There are also awards and recognitions for schools who consistently achieve and an appeal process for schools who disagree with their state assessments. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
There's a very important competition taking place in Washington, D.C. next week. It's the National Geography Bee, and West Virginia has a competitor who thinks he has the right stuff. Beneduccio reports.
Andrew Christie is an eighth grader at St. Francis Central Catholic School in Morgantown. He's going to represent West Virginia for the third year in a row at the National Geographic Bee. He came up short on his first two tries, but now it's his final chance to bring home $50,000 in college scholarships and bragging rights to the Mountain State.
It feels really good, and in sixth grade I was really nervous. In seventh grade I was pretty nervous, but this year I think I know what's going on, I know the drill. So I'm still a little bit nervous, but not as nervous as I have been before.
Like spelling bees at a geography bee, contestants must answer questions correctly to advance. But it's a bit different in that every contestant will have to answer 9 questions, and the best 10 competitors get to make it to the finals. That usually means if you miss 1 of the 9, you're probably out of the game. And they aren't easy questions either. Listeners, let's try one together. Here's the question. Caribbean Hindustani, a dialect of Hindi, is commonly spoken in an island country off the coast of Venezuela. Can you name the country? The answer is Trinidad and Tobago. That's a sample question of what might be asked in the bee. Andrew says the questions are tough, fewer multiple choice, and while clues may be given, a contestant really has to know where to find them.
Last year at Nationals, there was a question about the Gulf of Fonseca, which is between El Salvador, Honduras, and Nicaragua, and I got it wrong. They won't just straight ask you, like, what's the capital of this country or what river runs through this capital. They'll, like, word it differently, and they'll give you clues in the question. So it's easier than just knowing facts. If you can ask for them to repeat the question or for them to spell a word.
He may not have traveled to the Gulf of Fonseca, but he's traveled a lot for a 13-year-old young man. And he says traveling has helped him stay enthused about geography.
I like Western South America because that's where llamas live, and I really like llamas. They're my favorite animal. We went on a cruise in Europe 2 summers ago. We went to Italy, Greece, Croatia, and Turkey. And that was fun. And I've been to the Bahamas. I was 4. And we went to Niagara Falls.
To prepare for the challenge, Christy studies atlases and maps and takes online quizzes. He says the most difficult part of the competition every year are the other competitors.
In nationals, pretty much everyone is good because they had to win their state or like region or wherever. So everyone is good. They're like all on the same level or better than you.
But he loves the competition. Andrew will be attending Morgantown High School next year. He says he isn't sure about his future plans other than to attend college where he's interested in studying science or possibly architecture. Andrew will be in Washington this weekend to compete in the National Geographic Bee. The top 10 finalists will compete in the final round next Wednesday, moderated by journalist Soledad O'Brien. It will air on television on the National Geographic Channel. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown.
And you can learn more about this competition by going to our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Beneduccio. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.